We don't have a quorum yet, but we're going to get started. So, Mr. President, if you would like to state your name for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Eric Kaler, president of the University of Minnesota. I am joined here today by Kathleen O'Brien, our vice president for University Services, who will amplify and correct my testimony as required. I do thank you for this opportunity today to share with you our 2012 capital request. I do want you to know at the beginning of this that I'm committed to leading a responsive and transparent administration, and I invite you to contact me or a member of our administrative team if you have questions or need information about the university. Please let me begin with the mission of the University of Minnesota. With our more than 69,000 students, our 25,000 employees, our five campuses, and our extension, which is in all 87 counties. Our mission is carried out on five campuses: Crookston, Duluth, Morris, Rochester, and the Twin Cities. We also have 14 regional extension offices and 11 research and outreach centers across the state. Through our extension and outreach, our cultural, athletic, clinical, and youth development programs, we directly impact the lives of millions of Minnesotans annually. The U is unique among Minnesota's more than 30 public and its two dozen or so private, nonprofit, and for-profit institutions. We are the state's only land-grant public research institution. And now, Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to show a short video to illustrate further to you and your committee what exactly differentiates us as the state's only research university.
One moment. We're going to officially call the meeting to order because we have a quorum. And Representative Scalzi has probably looked at the minutes and could move those.
I have, and they're correct, and I move so.
Okay. All those in favor, or any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of say yes.
Yes.
Opposed? They carry. And I have to do this because of redistricting, and I have new neighbors, and they're wearing plaid vests. Two of them are here, and they multiply and gather. They are all over the place. And I would have said that even had I not.
Before the election or after the
election? After the election. Right now they're my neighbors. They're a suburb of Walker. And soon to maybe be my constituents. So with that, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Please.
You ask, what's unique about a public research university? The short answer is this. It's the place where people search for new knowledge. And that new knowledge creates businesses, lifts communities, and changes lives. And here's the key. It's not just star faculty that produce new knowledge. Just look at what these University of Minnesota students are doing. Joseph is helping create an artificial cornea that will be implantable in patients worldwide. Ashley is testing the effects of wastewater on neighboring farmlands. Nick is designing software for prototype toys his team will present to kids and industry professionals. Lindsay is finding out whether a tiny bug could endanger Minnesota's 930 million ash trees. Jared is creating molecular storage devices for electronics. Jeff is monitoring the health of streams along the North Shore. Scott is designing an underwater turbine that will produce power without having to dam a river. Abby is analyzing markets to help small businesses grow. Carolyn created a volunteer program to bring healthcare to the homeless while she completed medical school and trained for the Olympics. Toby is experimenting with energy-producing crops that will maintain soil quality. Summer is extending the art of storytelling through dance and choreography. Two-thirds of these students will stay here when they graduate. They'll be our leaders and our entrepreneurs. They'll be our smart workforce for new and growing industries. They'll be our teachers and healers, our artists and engineers. They'll make Minnesota a vibrant place to live.
Before I proceed, Mr. Chair, I would like to acknowledge that Regent Maureen Ramirez has joined us and is in the audience. Last fall, we enrolled 44,000 undergraduates and 18,000 graduate and professional students on our campuses, with another 7,000 non-degree students thrown in for good measure. We award about 14,000 degrees annually, delivering to the state some of the best qualified, critically thoughtful, highly skilled, and curious talent in the nation. These degrees include 90% of Minnesota science, technology, engineering, and math, or STEM, doctoral degrees, 85% of all degrees granted in Minnesota to physicians, and 100% of all dental, pharmacy, and veterinary degrees granted in the state. As you can see, the quality of our incoming freshman class was also our best ever. We are attracting and graduating the state's best and brightest students. That excellence and rigor enhances the value of a University of Minnesota degree. Our researchers attract about $800 million in funding for our state each year from federal granting agencies. That puts us eighth in the nation among public institutions for research funding, and that's remarkable considering that our state ranks 21st largest in the nation. We do indeed fight above our weight. Our research mission attracts some of the world's great scientists and investigators. We have a history of developing cures, medical devices, the car seat belt, and new strains of apples and wheat. Currently, we are a center for research into safety for the world's food supply, cures for diabetes and Alzheimer's, and for new nanotechnology processes that could aid Minnesota's manufacturing sector. Research funding, mostly from federal research organizations such as the National Institutes of Health and the National Science Foundation, supports about 16,000 jobs yearly in Minnesota. Research funding teaches young scientists, our students, how to be great scientists. Our partnership with the state of Minnesota is critical to the health and vitality of this great institution, our University of Minnesota. We provide an exceptional return on investment. For every dollar you here at the legislature with the governor invest in the U, we return $13.20 to the state's economy. That is a 13-to-1 return on investment on every dollar. The university significantly impacts the statewide economy through expenditures, government revenues, and the employment and personal income of residents. Beyond these financial benefits, the U is producing the workforce of the future and creating a stronger Minnesota. And I would like to add, we are extremely thankful for all that the legislature has done over the years for the university. We are confident we have stewarded your investments wisely. I want to particularly mention that your most recent bonding decisions helped construct our innovative and student-focused science teaching and student services building. Also, this past summer, we were pleased to receive funding for the physics and nanotechnology building, and that project is already significantly underway. Those dollars are not earning interest in some account somewhere. They are being spent today to put Minnesotans to work and purchase Minnesota-made products from Minnesota suppliers. Your support of our Biomedical Discovery District is nothing short of a game changer. It is in those state-of-the-art labs that Minnesota will lead the way in finding cures to the diseases that afflict us all. Our capital request emerges from a diligently thought-out six-year capital plan. That plan, approved by our Board of Regents, who this legislature elects, prioritizes projects with consideration of strategic academic priorities, facility condition assessments, campus master plans, and our financial and debt capacity. Now, let me take a few minutes to walk you through the specifics of each project in this year's request. Overall, we have advanced what is historically a modest $169 million request, and it includes five key projects. First is our Higher Education Asset Preservation and Restoration Funding Request, or HEPR for short. The University of Minnesota is home to more than 850 buildings with more than 28 million square feet system-wide. Compared to all other public entities, the University of Minnesota's facility inventory includes the oldest buildings. And in fact, 70% of our buildings are more than 30 years old. More significantly, about a quarter of our buildings are at least 70 years old. So again, about a quarter of our buildings are at least 70 years old. To fulfill our academic mission and graduate students ready to work in today's high technology, business, research, and production environments, our facilities need to be on the cutting edge. We simply cannot effectively train tomorrow's generation of workers in yesterday's laboratories or classrooms. To extend the useful life of our infrastructure, we are requesting $90 million for HEPR. This request will support 75 projects on all five campuses and throughout our research and field stations. We prioritize HEPR projects to improve safety and accessibility, extend facilities life, and improve energy efficiency. In that way, our HEPR request is much more than just for bricks and mortars, because these investments are critical to strategically reducing operating costs, leveraging external research funding, and enhancing student success. So while HEPR is perhaps a little prosaic, my wife Karen pointed out poetically that strategically speaking, HEPR is cheaper. Slide 12 will show you our need for the combined heat and power plant on the university's Twin Cities campus, especially as it affects our academic health center and research efforts. Currently, the Minneapolis campus relies on its southeast steam plant for 100% of its steam. This is a vulnerable situation that must be addressed. Today, the university's Minneapolis campus includes about 18 million square feet with 163 buildings that have growing heating, cooling, and electrical needs. The university anticipates a shortage in boiler capacity for the Minneapolis campus beginning in 2015 due to increased demand and aging equipment. The old main plant, which this will replace, is currently decommissioned and is the ideal location for a second source of steam production. We propose adding 2 7-megawatt natural gas-fired turbines as a combined heat and power system with heat recovery steam generators. They would replace inefficient World War II-era coal burners. We would construct also systems to support a future chilled water cluster plant and another natural gas boiler. Next up is our Itasca Biological Station and Laboratories, which, like no other location in our state, lives at the convergence of three ecosystems: our pine forests, our hardwood forests, and the tallgrass prairie. Affiliated with our College of Biological Sciences in the Twin Cities, which attracts the state's most qualified young scientists, the station has brought tens of thousands of students, teachers, and scientists to this place near the headwaters of the Mississippi River. As modern as the science is that is being explored there, the facilities are World War II era. This project will consolidate functions from three deteriorating facilities into a new campus center, a 12,000-square-foot year-round facility with laboratories, classrooms, offices, and an auditorium, all equipped with the latest technology. This project will also create 12 full-time year-round jobs and be a living laboratory for 130 students and faculty. The Itasca Field Station and Laboratories are as essential to the university's research mission as the most sophisticated molecular biological laboratory. It will respond to increasing demands from increased enrollment in our College of Biological Sciences and keen interest in preserving Minnesota's fragile environment. Built in 1886, Eddy Hall is the oldest building on the University of Minnesota's Twin Cities campus and is on the National Register of Historic Places. The building is now vacant. Our capital request is twofold. First, we would rehabilitate Eddy Hall for international and transfer students' admission offices. This will improve the accessibility for students. Currently, the international and transfer student programs are located in underground Williamson Hall. This phase of the project will create approximately 20,000 square feet of office and student service space, add fire safety features, and provide major structural repairs. I feel we must make the university a welcoming place for international students and transfer students, and in 2011, the U's Twin Cities campus served 2,046 new transfer students and 2,357 international undergraduates, and the majority of transfer students come to us from Minsky colleges. The second phase of this project is to reconfigure three buildings to strategically provide about 100,000 square feet of alternative workspaces. Occupants of Williamson and Fraser Hall will then be relocated, and these two outdated buildings will be decommissioned, saving about $1.1 million a year in operating costs. The alternative workplace strategy that we will develop is a growing trend in the private sector, and it's aimed at limiting space constraints and reducing costs while promoting peak performance. This transformation in the workplace is a result of employers' greater ability to provide technology to allow employee mobility. This is being done in Minnesota companies, and 75% of a recent General Mills pilot program said they would not return to a traditional workspace. And I understand the state of Minnesota is exploring alternative workspace as you plan the future of the Capitol building. The example photos here are from General Mills and show the strategic shared space layouts that fulfill employee needs, use less space, and help us retain top talent. Finally, let me turn to the American Indian Learning Resource Center on our Duluth campus. This project was previously passed by the legislature, but vetoed by Governor Plenty in 2010. We want to construct a new four-story facility to consolidate American Indian Studies programs into one building prominently located on the southwest corner of campus. We will construct classrooms, a library, a computer lab, and space for faculty and student services, while at the same time housing precious Native artifacts. It will consolidate more than 20 American Indian programs on campus, and it will stand as the gateway to the UMD campus and serve many non-Native students as well. In fact, the majority of students taking American Indian related classes in UMD are non-Native, even as UMD is noted for the size of its American Indian student community and the number of American Indian physicians who are trained at our medical school there. I visited Duluth last month, and I'm pleased to report that there is deep and broad support for this project within Duluth and northeastern Minnesota business community. Members of the committee, Mr. Chair, it is important that you know that each of the five projects that I have presented to you today will help fulfill our mission. Our mission of delivering the best possible academic experience for our students, our mission of increasing our ability to retain and attract top researchers and grants, and our mission of generating statewide economic returns, including job creation. University of Minnesota is mindful of the budgetary pressures you and your colleagues face, but I believe firmly there is no greater investment than the University of Minnesota. And we, of course, are committed to investing $40 million of our own bonding capacity to partner with the state on these projects. For us to attract and retain the best students, faculty, and staff, our physical plant must be responsibly and environmentally up to date. For us to train our students in the most productive surroundings, we need excellent facilities. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I am honored to be here today to represent your state's only research university. I came back to the university because I believe in its institution, in the institution, its students, and its mission. In the past, you have partnered with the university to provide the resources that are needed to maximize its potential, and I hope you will do the same this year. We respectfully seek your support for our capital request. With your permission, I would like to introduce to you Dr. Carolyn Hayes, Professor of Mechanical Engineering, and students Greg Lefevre, Chris Tastad, Marissa Kramer, and David Bennett, all of whom, with your permission, would like to testify in support of our request. And, of course, I am happy to answer any questions either now or at the conclusion of their testimony.
Dr. Kaler, I believe we have a question already. Representative Carlson, excuse me.
Well, Madam Chair, I didn't realize there were others testify. I'll wait until they're
okay.
Done with their
very
testimony.
Fine.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay.
Sounds good.
Thank you.
Hello and welcome to the Capital Investment Committee. Please state your name and your title for our record.
Thank you. Madam Chair or
that's fine.
And committee members, I'm Caroline Hayes, Professor of Mechanical Engineering at the University of Minnesota. And I'm here to tell you about the aging infrastructure at the University of Minnesota, which has become an impediment to our ability to give students a 21st century education. So with me here today, I have two students. This is Greg Lefevre and David Bennett, and they will be providing some examples based on their own experience in their departments of what HEPR funds are needed for in order to help them do their work. And in particular, these examples are representative. They're drawn from particular departments, but they're representative of examples of things that are happening in departments all over the university and through all of our branches. So I'll do a little bit of boasting about our students because they're too modest to do it themselves. But so first, Mr. Greg Lefevre, he's a graduate student in civil engineering, and his work is in developing environmentally low-impact approaches for eliminating toxins in runoff water. And his program is one of the top programs, the leading programs in the nation in this type of technology. And his lab has worked very closely with the state's pollution control agency and continues to do so. Mr. David Bennett is an entrepreneur and a graduate student in mechanical engineering, my department. So he, in his early career, founded a Minnesota engine company, Biphase Technologies. Then he sold it in 2000 and actually retired for a short while, but I think he was kind of bored. He's not the kind of guy to retire and rest on his laurels. So he wasn't content with that. He went back to school, and he wanted to learn new and better technology, the latest and greatest, so that he can continue to invent new, better engine technologies that are going to save energy and money for our state and the nation. So with that, I'll hand it over to Greg Lefevre.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Lefevre. Please state your name and your position for the tape.
My name is Gregory Lefevre, and I'm a graduate student in the Department of Civil Engineering. Is this okay?
Can you
hear?
Yep, okay. Perfect.
All right, Madam Chair and the committee, I'll speak to you about what my experience is working as a graduate student in the civil engineering building, and particularly some of the issues that we had with water leaks interrupting some of our experiments in there. We had regular problems with water leaks in the civil engineering building, and these were highly disruptive to our full capacity research because of the fact that we could not leave experiments going overnight without fear that we would come in the next day and they'd be ruined because of a water leak that happened. Sometimes this was something that would be gradual, and we would see a sponge effect coming in the ceiling tile, and we could put a bucket underneath it and worry about it that way. And sometimes it would be immediate. And those immediate ones were the leaks that we really had to worry about, because we would have to cover our equipment at night with plastic tarps to ensure that we didn't have a $10,000 or $15,000 or $30,000 piece of equipment get ruined by a water leak that came down from the ceiling. And this was also really damaging to data too. There was a master's student that was working in our laboratory and then left a laboratory notebook, and in the sciences, laboratory notebook is your life. It's the deed to your thesis. This is how you have to have all of your data in it. And she came in and the water had leaked right on top of it and was ruined. And it was a really tragic event for that. And because of all of these issues that have come through, we've now been forced to move to another laboratory. And this has obviously been disrupted to the research, but it is better in the short term because we have to, or it's not leaking on us, but it's not a long-term solution. And we also don't have the same space that we formerly did. We are now have approximately a third of the laboratory square footage that we previously did. So I just wanted to conclude that saying that as a student that is in there, we did regularly have to, this was something that was concerning to the production of our research activities and for being able to actively generate the peer-reviewed publications that are what really attract the graduate students and faculty to the university.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Bennett, please identify yourself and your position for the record.
Madam Chair, committee members, I am David Bennett. I am the oldest full-time graduate student in mechanical engineering. I'm here to give you an example of how our current infrastructure is an impediment to a 21st century education. I returned to graduate school in 2009 to gain the theoretical know-how to design a fuel system to utilize the newly discovered supplies of natural gas. For the upcoming generation of high-efficiency American light truck engines being introduced in 2014. We are the only American university working on such a project. It is, however, being pursued by South Korean, Japanese, Chinese, and Australian researchers. So we have some competition. Already, 7 patent disclosures have been filed with the university's Office of Technology Commercialization. In the last weeks, the decision has been made to file provisional patents on 2 of these disclosures. However, I can't even test portions of this new system. In the current 1948 building, the laboratory ventilation system is not up to code, and therefore I can't use it. Furthermore, it is not possible to update one lab at a time because code requires that to make one change, we must bring the whole building up to code. HEPR funds will make it possible to bring the lab up to 21st century standards so that the new technology can continue to be explored, and important to me, young engineering students can be educated with hands-on experience in emerging technologies. Thank you very much.
Okay. Members, do we have any questions for the testifiers, either at the table or previous testifiers? Representative Carlson?
Yeah. Unless there's questions of these, my question was of the president.
Okay.
So
okay. Any other questions? Oh, Representative Norris. Oh,
my question would be of President Kaler.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, with your approval, we have a few students. I believe there are 3 who would like to address the committee briefly.
Sure.
Chris. Marissa.
Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair, member of the committees, my name is Christopher Tosted. I'm an undergraduate student in the College of Biological Sciences studying biochemistry on the University of Minnesota Twin Cities campus. And I am the chairman of the Minnesota Student Legislative Coalition, which is a newly formed organization that works to engage students in the legislative process within the University of Minnesota system. And we speak on behalf of students for the university and work to engage legislators like yourself. And I'd like to, on behalf of students, show our support for the university's bonding request. We see this as something that provides support to students. It's something that the university values in our mission as we try to work towards the things that we see as our obligation to the state and to its citizens. And what we would like to do is be able to provide a level of context from our perspective as students and kind of speak to the story that goes beyond what the other testifiers have done in terms of adequately and to effectively providing justification for the need. I think our stories can serve as potentially a representative example of why these buildings are important to the state and why they serve a key aspect in bonding. In my personal experience as a student in the College of Biological Sciences, my experience started at the Itasca Biological Station, like every other student within the College of Biological Stations. There's a program called The Nature of Life. It serves as an alternative orientation program for every incoming CBS freshman. Through this program, we're able to go up to Itasca, in addition to regular activities that are going on at the university, and spend 3 days at the Itasca Biological Station participating in various activities. It essentially boils down to what some would call a science camp, potentially. For folks outside of the science field, that doesn't sound like the most fun, but I can attest to that. It's incredibly engaging. It's the kind of thing that sets the tone for what my college experience has been, and it's ultimately what all of the students that leave the College of Biological Sciences and go on to become leaders in healthcare, leaders in biotechnology, the people that are driving what this state is doing in terms of research and in terms of economic development. These people are looking back on an experience like what happened at Itasca. It's the kind of thing where, to address the experience specifically, we're able to engage with faculty members. They're there the entire time running this 3-day camp. They're in their shorts. They're away from their research. They're normal people. We're able to engage them. We're able to engage our counterparts and upperclassmen at Itasca and really gain an appreciation for the community that develops in what is a small college experience at a large university with a vast amount of resources. So what we really gain in that sense and what happens at that Itasca Biological Station through the research that we're doing and the initiatives and the integrative biology that's taught there and carried forward is a true appreciation for something like Itasca as something that represents what Minnesota is about, both greater Minnesota and what the university really strives to do in its mission, and we gain an appreciation for what we plan on doing and what we're able to do in our own careers. So in that sense, I would hope that you would see something, a story like that, as representative as to what goes beyond applying a justification just in an operational level for these buildings, but what really can be served by supporting an initiative like Itasca or like other things on the platform. And I would be open to stand for questions.
Any questions for Mr. Tolstad? All right, we'll hear from the other testifier. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to speak before you today. My name is Marissa Kramer. I'm from Mankato, Minnesota, and I'm a sophomore undergraduate student at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I study political science and philosophy. I wish to voice MSLC's support of the UMN capital request. Every aspect of this capital request seeks to better the quality of education and the quality of life for Minnesota students, faculty, and community members. I will focus my testimony today on the University of Minnesota request for funds to renovate and update the combined heat and power plant that now provides heating, cooling, and electrical needs to 163 buildings on the Minneapolis campus. In addition to my being an advocate for MSLC, I'm also a member of a student group called Campus Beyond Coal that works to encourage University of Minnesota Twin Cities investment in clean, innovative energy systems. Last year, we negotiated with University of Minnesota TC administration to draft a climate action plan that maps out the campus's plan to transition from coal to clean, innovative resources. These discussions and the resulting climate action plan illustrate the university's commitment to research energy efficiency. The University of Minnesota capital request for funding to update the combined heat and power plant outdated facilities demonstrates these commitments, and it encourages the immediate creation of jobs in construction and the like. The proposed renovations to the combined heat and power plant follow the climate action plan, namely in their focus on the use of natural gas. I recognize that I might not be able to articulate the operational values that facilities and housing providers see in the proposed renovations to the facility, but I can attest to the tangible benefits that come from the renovation of the outdated facilities, such as lower energy costs and energy independence. The completion of renovations to the combined heat and power plant will produce tangible results in energy efficiency efforts. It is important to acknowledge the true value of the old main facility that was built in 1912. We have an opportunity to bring an outdated system to date and create jobs and incite clean energy research and development in the state of Minnesota. The University of Minnesota can lead the way towards an energy efficient and an energy independent future with your help and collaboration. Thank you, and I will stand for questions at this time.
Any questions for Ms. Kramer? All right, thank you both for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I let you go too soon. Representative Clark has a question.
I think this is for Ms. Kramer. I'm not sure. Maybe not. But when you're talking about the latest, and I was looking at the document too, the latest in energy efficiency, and I think the President earlier mentioned something about a chiller. What are you doing in the area of, you know, I can't remember the exact term for it now, but anyway, it's dealing with air, especially in the area of air conditioning, being able to, you know, hold chill water that then is then later used during non-peak storage, I think it's called. Is anything like that part of this project?
Ms. Kramer. I know, thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. I am not able to comfortably answer that question. I don't know specifically the renovations in that area, but I can speak at length about the proposed renovations to use natural gas and like renewable energy resources.
I'm sure maybe somebody else can answer that question.
Okay, all right. Thank you both, students. Appreciate you being here. Representative Kaler, do you want to take a crack at that question that Representative Clark had?
Madam Chair, Madam Representative, I have brought with me Vice President O'Brien, Vice President for Facilities, and if anybody in this room can answer your question, I believe she can, and I'll ask her to try.
So
go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Scott, and Representative Clark, and committee members, in the combined heat and power plant proposal that has a chiller unit. Yes, we have investigated that particular design functionality. We are just in the process right now of retaining the design team, and we're really going to be trying to determine if that's the most efficient functionality at this particular site. But we aren't completely done with the design yet.
Representative Clark.
Do you know the proper term for what I'm calling it, referring to? I just can't remember.
I don't know the exact right term, but I'll get it to you, Representative Clark. Madam Chair.
I know that Denver, Madam Chair, has invested in this, I think, in their municipality, and it saved lots and lots of money. And so I just hope that we're on top of that technology.
Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions for this testifier? Because I know I have one. Representative
I've got two questions, probably one for each, but I'll start with President Kaler. And it's not directly related to the capital request other than an earlier investment that we made in some other facilities. Read in the Tribune when we lost a major researcher to Texas that was dealing with research with heart, developed a artificial heart, I guess is what I would call it. Mm-hmm. Some of us had a chance to visit the lab and see that firsthand. My question is, with a major loss like that, and it's my understanding she wanted to be closer to family, so it was one of those personal things, but what happens to the work that she was doing? You know, so often those research dollars follow the lead researcher, and is the impact going to be greater than just the loss of that individual is basically the question.
President Kaler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Carlson, indeed, losing Doris Taylor was not something that the university enjoyed, but it is a fact of life that we exist in a market where researchers do move back and forth. We will avidly search to replace that that skill set. She does play an important role in our regenerative organ research activity, but we have many other people in that space, and we'll work to replace her. My understanding is that the amount of federal research dollars she had devoted to that was relatively small, so I don't anticipate a large reduction in our overall research funding as a result of her departure, but we will work to fill that hole.
Okay, and that was basically the question, if there were dollars that would be potentially following her. But okay. The other question I have is the same question that I had relative to the other members of the committee relative to HEPR. Are these... we've got the handout here. Are these the priority ranking by campus?
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, yes, they are in priority order.
Okay. The question I asked of Minskew then, because I noticed that on many of their lists, if you'll recall, that roofs were down the line, and other repair was above roofs. And I also noticed that tuck pointing is down the line on some of the campuses, and I've always been a strong believer that we protect our current assets, and water damage can be horrendous and cost us more. In fact, I might have used the example, if I didn't the other day, I'll use it here, but I remember when we were doing a tour a number of years ago, Falwell Hall, the amount of water damage because proper repairs hadn't been made, and it was going to cost us much more than what it would have cost us if they would have been taken care of initially. And the question that I asked them the other day was, are any of these roofs leaking? And they didn't know. They're supposed to get back to us. He was going to contact all of the presidents on his campus. But I just want to, at this point, then express that concern. If they're normal maintenance, and there's a bit of a timeline here, that's one question, but if some of them are leaking, causing water damage, and you have the same issues with tuck pointing that you have with roofs, then I would be concerned about the priority ranking by campus to make sure we're protecting those assets. So if that would be a question, I think, of Vice President O'Brien.
O'Brien, go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, of course, we share your concern about using HEPR dollars to ensure that we're stopping further damage from happening, as well as controlling costs. actually the support the legislature has given us for HEPR dollars over the years has helped us deal with those emergencies. And so the emergency roof replacements that really are the leaking roof right now are items that we address in a very timely fashion. And as you also know, because we have flexibility with our HEPR dollars, if we have a windstorm or a pipe burst, we're able to reprioritize these items to deal with those immediate emergencies and stop that damage from happening or compounding itself.
And Madam Chair, I understand your flexibility, but just wanted to express concern that as far as I'm concerned, we'd grant your full HEPR request, and then it would be a non-issue. But I don't know if that's what in the end will happen or not. Those decisions are yet to be made. But if not, just want to express the concern that we protect our current assets so that it doesn't cost us more later.
Absolutely.
Very good. I just had a comment in regard to the professor that or the doctor that we lost to Texas, and I think it's significant, you know, if she was working on medical device technology and so forth. And I think I heard on the news this week that this week is the week that the tax on medical devices goes up in our country, and I think it's a sad day for America because I think it's the wrong move to tax something that especially is so important to the state of Minnesota. I also had a question regarding the heating plant, and that is, have you done an estimate on what you expect to save annually in dollars by getting this new thing up and running?
Madam Chair, yes. As I recall, and I will ask Vice President O'Brien to correct me, but it's on the order of $7 million a year.
Pretty significant. Representative Jaskowski has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you both for attending and presenting to us today. Just a question on the overall request. It appears that HEPR is on top of the heap. No pun intended, Mr. President. And it's cheaper, too. Are these also in priority order? The second part of that question would be, if they are, why is it that the university isn't placing some of its eggs in HEPR and seems to be placing them in items that appear to be of lower priority?
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, yes, they are in priority order. And my understanding, being relatively new on the block, is that historically we have operated with 100% state dollars in our HEPR funds, and we partner with you with a one-third share of bonding for the other capital requests that we have. And perhaps Vice President O'Brien can correct or add to that comment.
Vice President.
Madam Chair, Representative, the only addition I would make to the President's comments is the university also does fund repair and replacement within its various campuses.
Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one last question, actually going off of Madam Chair's question. What do you anticipate the dollars that will be freed up, the $7 million in savings, will that be invested somehow in these projects, or is it reflected in the budgets for them already, or what do we know about that?
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, indeed those would be energy-saving dollars. We would put them back into our overall budget. We charge with this is a little bit in the weeds, I apologize, but a highly decentralized budget in which units have a charge for energy costs in the space that they're in. So this would reduce our overall charges for energy and actually reflect at the net bottom line of the institution. We would then redeploy those dollars in support of our educational mission primarily and other emergency needs that could occur, including the repair and replacement account that we use for funding.
President O'Brien wants to chime in.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think it's important to recognize that the savings is $7 million annually. So it's not just a capital savings, it's an operating savings.
Mm-hmm. And to follow up on that question, I know the student, Ms. Kramer, mentioned about the renewable energies that were going to be used in this new facility. Have you done any cost comparisons if you just went strictly coal burning versus adding these other technologies, what the cost savings would be, or would there be any difference there?
Madam Chair, we've looked at a variety of models, I think fairly exhaustively, and given the price of natural gas right now, natural gas is by far the most economical fuel to use, as well as being a minimal carbon dioxide production.
All right. Representative Mellon.
Madam Chair, can I do just a
follow-up? I'm sorry. I thought you were finished. Representative Juskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Now, the $7 million annually, that was for, I'm trying to remember, was it for HEPR or for the heat and power plant? And then the other part of that question would be, can we anticipate whatever those savings are out of the bonding support that may be provided here, can we anticipate that in the next biennial budget request that there would be a line item that recognized a reduction for that amount of savings made available by these requests?
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Mr. Representative, again, those are our annual operating expense costs that would accrue to benefit the university as a consequence of this capital investment. They would certainly flow to our spreadsheet. I think the answer, and I don't mean to be flip about this, would be how deep into the spreadsheets do you want to go before you see that that net credit, but it would show up as a net energy savings percolating through and influencing our operating request of you and your colleagues and the tuition impact that we would have to ask our students to carry. So it reflects the net positive good of the university.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And President Kaler, I see that it says that 68% of your students are Minnesota High School graduates. Does that include all the campuses and all the levels of degrees?
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Madam Representative, that is a system-wide number across the entire student body, yes.
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And President Kaler, do you know offhand what the enrollment looks like for maybe some of your graduate programs or professional degrees, specifically dental or medicine?
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Madam Representative, I do not have those on the top of my head. I'd rather give you accurate information so I can get back with you on that. The medical school class, my best estimate is about 250 on the Twin Cities campus and perhaps 100 in Duluth. And medical school is on the order of 100 or so. Those are rough numbers. I'll get you the accurate ones.
Thank you, Madam Chair and President Kaler. I think it would be helpful if I could see those numbers, and especially how many of those students are Minnesota residents. I ask because I represent northern Minnesota, and some recent college graduates recently from the area were thinking of applying to dental school at the U, and our local dentists, who are U graduates from years ago, told them not to even bother to apply because it's so hard for Minnesota residents to get into the dental school at the U. And I realize that some of that is because of budget cuts and you get more tuition from out-state students, but you know, I want the U to be as most competitive as possible, and of course to be preparing our workforce for tomorrow, but I'm concerned that a lot of our Minnesota students can't get into some of the professional programs. Last I heard is it's almost 50-50 now, resident and non-resident in the dental program at the U.
Can you find the answers out for that question?
Madam Chair, Madam Representative, I can. The professional school fees are not differentiated in state and out of state, so it's a competitive process to enter, but we will get you those numbers.
Thank you. Very good. Any further questions? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Nornes.
I was out of the room for a bit. My question's probably been asked already, but it had to do with the power plant request. And I just had a question. Since you're located so close to the Mississippi, is there any consideration or possibility of any hydro energy produced there? And along with that, I was also asking about wind turbines. Does the university have any? I know they do in Morris, but I don't know if you do on your Twin City campus.
Vice President O'Brien, you want to talk?
Madam Chair, Representative Nornes, there, although the University of Minnesota is next to the Mississippi River, the current licenses for use of water power are owned by Xcel itself or also another small company that has a very limited amount of water power. So it would be a long journey to try to utilize the reason why Minneapolis is where it is in the first place, right? Secondly, in terms of wind power, yes, we have two wind turbines at Morris. We also have one wind turbine in Dakota County in Newmore Park that's part of a federal renewable energy research project, and perhaps another one at that location soon, really doing research on if how much wind can be, how much wind power can be received from areas with limited wind. So that is a continuing study by the university on its research side, but also its operating side.
Representative Fabian, you're next, but Representative Bills, did your question pertain to this subject? Okay. Go ahead.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for testifying. And that's actually my district, and that was the first I had ever heard of another wind turbine, and I was just wondering if you could discuss that a little bit, I think I'm pretty tied in with the community out there, but that's the first time I've ever heard it, and I was wondering if we could get a little bit more information.
Vice President O'Brien.
Madam Chair and Representative Bills, of course we can get you more detailed information. Actually, the St. Anthony Falls Research Laboratory received a federal stimulus grant to locate the wind turbine at Newmore Park and to do this renewable energy research, and we'd be happy to get the background information for you.
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know that the one turbine is out there because we can see it from Rosemont. So,
yes.
So I know that's there. And I was actually on the city council when we first started talking about that. But you had mentioned another. So there's another turbine that may be going in as well? A second turbine?
Madam Chair, I believe that they're investigating expanding that research project, and we'll get information.
Okay. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. President Kaler and Vice President O'Brien, I'd like to follow up on Representative Moline's. She kind of cracked the egg here a little bit, so I'd like to maybe throw it into the frying pan. But I've had the same concern expressed to me about the veterinarian school and so forth, and I know this is not what this hearing is necessarily about, but could you provide that information to us on a wide range of your postgraduate programs as to how many out-of-state students are in? Possibly some information as to why it's difficult for in-state students to get in. And thirdly, maybe do some sort of a comparison that indicates what our neighboring states do in terms of what is the percentage of resident versus non-resident students who are in their postgraduate degree programs.
President Kaler.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Fabian, of course, we'll provide that information and that analysis to you. Absolutely.
Any other questions? Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since you're looking at that second wind turbine, I'm assuming that that you have faculty or researchers who are in touch with the broader community about what research is actually still valuable. When the first turbine went up, I did have some feedback from some in the industry around the state who were confused because it appeared that the university was really heading in a direction of research that really has already been done. Since I hear about a second one, I would assume that before you move in a particular direction that you are in touch with the industry to say, is this really cutting edge? Is this something that's not being done somewhere else?
President Kaler.
Madam Chair, Representative Hausman, I'm tempted to say, of course, but I will tell you that the grant that we received was from the Department of Energy. It was a peer-reviewed grant, and we have industrial partners. So I believe that the process that it was gone through for awarding of those federal dollars and for cost share from our industry partners would have ensured that we were doing work that was useful. So. And perhaps offline we could talk a little more about where that feedback is coming from, because I don't think that's a valid criticism of the work we're doing there.
Okay. Any further questions for the testifiers? Representative Clark.
Thank you. Well, since we seem to be going far afield, I'll ask a question. In terms of, I don't know if it specifically applies to the biological station laboratories, but a lot of our research at the university is backed or funded by private corporations, right? And I'm just, you know what I would really like? I'd like a inventory of, especially in the biomedical area, some of the companies that are contributing to our biomedical research, just so we can see what the public investment is versus the private investment. Because I know the university, and I heard you, President Keller, talk about being proud of industry's, ability to take university products and make them into enterprises. So I'd just like to know a little bit more about how that's actually working, some sort of, I guess, review of that would be what I'd ask. I did that a few years ago, and it was very interesting in all of our different parts of the college to see how we're tied to industry. And kind of course, underlying my question is, being tied to industry is one thing, and also trying to know what the feedback back and forth is in terms of good science is what I'm interested in. So if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to get that kind of a update.
Representative Kaler.
Madam Chair, Madam Representative, certainly we have a report of industry-sponsored research and tabulations. We can generate that information for you, and we'll get it to you.
Thank you. I hope you have someone taking notes for you today. We got a long laundry list.
I hope I do too, Madam Chair.
Representative Kahn.
Thank you. Mr. President, I'm interested in how the new buildings are being filled, in sense the biomedical discovery complex and so forth. What is the what's the rate of occupancy and vacancy, and what about when is the nanotechnology building due to open, and what is the, are we looking at new people or expanding existing labs into those, or what?
So, excuse me, President Kaler.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Kahn. I'll answer the second one first and ask Vice President O'Brien to update you as she can on filling the new ones. But in general, new space is filled by a combination of people decompressing from existing space. That existing space may be reprogrammed for other uses, and by new faculty and researchers that we hire. Generally, an opportunity for growth there too. So, for example, in the nanotechnology building, researchers will move into that building from Tate Laboratory, which is the current building physics is housed in, which is on the mall. It's a historic building, and it's not well suited for modern experimental physics. That building will then be part of our capital request going forward, and then we would move geological sciences into that building. So it's sort of a cascade effect as we reallocate and renovate for space. The biomedical discovery district phasing in space, all I can tell you is that when I visit those buildings, there certainly seems to be plenty of activity there. Perhaps the Vice President can give you a more quantitative answer.
Vice President O'Brien.
Thank you, Mr. President, Madam Chair, and Representative Kahn. The Biomedical Discovery District is funding four separate projects. The first project, the Center for Magnetic Resonance Research, was completed last year, and it is fully occupied. New magnets have been delivered, and it is doing the job that we envisioned it doing. The second and third projects are the cancer and cardio projects that are under construction now. The groundbreaking was last spring. They will be completed next spring. Again, the plan is to have the movement of some faculty members from existing buildings in the Academic Health Center over to cancer and cardio, and some new positions filled. So it is a mix in those two new facilities. The fourth facility, which will be a microbiology infectious disease facility, is just at the process of going to the State Designer Selection Board and hiring an architect. You'll recall from the Biomedical Discovery District, it envisioned staging over the time. So I think it's important for you to know that we're on schedule and proceeding with those projects. And I'm also pleased to say that the support you gave to the Physics Nano building last summer, that building is well under construction. We have about $7 million already spent, $64 million under contract, The build project is literally coming out of the ground and will be done a year from now. So when you wanted to fund shovel-ready projects, that project was shovel-ready and well underway now, Madam Chair.
Representative Cotton.
Again, continuing on the issue of graduate faculty and students and so forth, there has been problems with the new attitude from the federal government in foreign students and foreign faculty members. Have you done any special work in that area? People having very long delays in getting visas, very inability to go back and forth and visit families and so forth. Is the university being proactive on this or trying to get help from the federal government?
Madam Chair, Madam Representative, indeed that is a problem. It is a barrier sometimes for recruiting of foreign scientists who would be at the front of their field. When we can help, we do contact our federal representatives and encourage them to help and intervene as we can. It is a national conversation, of course, as you well know, and among university presidents, the AAU and APLU organizations, so which give a voice to higher education concerns. We've made our position clear, and I hope whether we move in a more welcoming direction.
Ladies and gentlemen of the committee, I know the president is a busy man, and he's been answering some questions here that are maybe a little bit outside of the purview of capital investment. And
once
I know
someone started.
So we won't steal Representative Nornes's gavel here away from him in that area, and we thank you for your time and for being here, both Mr. President and Vice President as well. And with that, folks, we are adjourned.
Thank you for considering our request. Thank you.